This week's parsha is Vayetze, and I want to talk about this evening one of the more famous parts of Vayetze, and that is the ladder, the whole imagery of Yaakov's dream. And what's fascinating is I want to share with you there are so many different approaches to what the symbolism is of the dream. But we know the basic story. Yaakov is running away from his brother Esav. He also has a second mission to go to Lavan, to the house of Lavan, and to get married there. And along the way, he goes to sleep one night, right? He surrounds himself with these avanim, with these stones, and he has a dream. And in the dream, I'll read the other words to you because it'll be important to see how the commentators interpret it. Vayachalom is right at the beginning of the parsha, right? He has a dream. Vinei sulam mutzav arza. There's this ladder that's resting on the earth, on the ground. Viroshom magia shemaima, but it's quite a large ladder because it goes all the way up until it reaches heaven. Right? It's resting on the earth, but it reaches towards the heavens. And in addition, vinei malachei elokim, and there's angels of God, olim v'yordim bo, who are ascending the ladder and descending the ladder. Okay, so we have a very big ladder touching the ground, but reaching all the way to the heavens. And there's angels that are ascending and descending. And in addition, the next pasuk Yud Gimel, v'hinei Hashem nitzav alav. And who's on top of the ladder? And the angels are ascending and descending, but God is above. Right? God is hovering above the ladder. And God then speaks to Yaakov in the dream. Vayomer ani Hashem, I am God, Elokei Avraham Avicha, Elokei Yitzchak, I am the God of your father Avram, and your father Yitzchak. Ha'aretz asher atah yosheichev aleiha l'cha nelo zaracha. And this land that you are lying down upon, there's a whole separate, I'm not getting into tonight, a whole separate discussion. Where did he go to sleep? Some say, Rashi famously says he passed by the place of the Beis HaMikdash and of Yerushalayim, and he miraculously was brought back. Ramban quotes several midrashim say he actually fell asleep in Be'er Sheva right soon after he left. So different opinions exactly where he had this dream, but this place where you're sleeping, it's the land of Israel. I'm going to give to you and to your descendants, and your children will spread out, and they will all the families of the earth will be blessed themselves by you and by your offspring, and I'll be with you and guard you where all that you will go, and I'll bring you back to this land. I won't forsake you, right, until I've performed what I've spoken to you. Okay, so that's the dream. So the question is, I want to discuss what is the symbolism? The symbolism of the ladder, the angels, and God hovering above. So Rashi, very famous, because people usually learn Rashi with this. But Rashi tells us the following: Olim v'yordim, the angels are ascending and descending. So Rashi's bothered by there's something strange here, that why are they going up and then coming down? Shouldn't they, if they're coming, where do angels come from? They come from heaven, so they should be going down first. And then once they finish whatever they have to do down here, and then go back up. But here it's the opposite. They're ascending and then descending, right? The commentaries on Rashi point out what's bothering Rashi. It should be that they're going down and then coming up. So I say that they're going up and only afterwards they're going down. Like an angel, if angels are from heaven, they should be first coming down. So says Rashi. Olim tchila, right? It's unusual. First, it says that they're going up, and only afterwards yardim that they're going down. So Rashi says, "Malachim shehilvu ba'aretz, ein yotzim chutz aretz," that Yaakov had an escort. He had the secret police, secret service members were watching over him, and the ones who had watched over him while he was in Israel, dealing with his brother Esav and having to flee, so. Their job was basically done, or their job was exclusively in the land of Israel. So as he's about to exit the land, those people are going up. Their job is finished. They're only to protect Yaakov and Israel. And then the new angels are needed who have a new tasket of a new responsibility. Their job is to protect Yaakov outside of Israel. Right? They're the Chutz La'aretz, police. Right? The Chutz La'aretz secret service. Also. So that's why it has this strange expression, first going up and then coming down. Because the ones who are with them until now are going to return up to heaven, and new ones are going to have to come down from heaven to escort him outside the land of Israel. That's Rashi's interpretation. Again, it's a very powerful message that Hashem was giving Yaakov, that I'm going to watch over you no matter where you are, no matter where you find yourself, even in different predicaments, situations, locations. I'm going to be there to protect you, right? I'm going to watch you during this very long and difficult journey that you're about to undertake. I'm going to come back to this with a little different interpretation in a moment, but that's Rashi's interpretation. The Ramban says, let me come back to it at the end. I'll share one additional insight upon this Rashi. So the Ramban has a different approach, and he says the following. What was God showing Yaakov in this dream? What message was being transmitted? Whatever exactly this means, that God has his messengers, right? That God has the angels who do what he wants to happen down on this world, on this earth. And it's all done through God's decree. God wills something, so these are his messengers who carry out his will. And he quotes a pasuk in Zechariah, Malachi Elohim, Asher Shalach Hashem Lisalech Ba'aretz, Lo Yasu Ketanam Gdolah, Shuvam Niskatzev Aladon Nekol Aretz. Angels of God, whom Hashem sends to travel throughout the earth, do not do anything minor or major before returning to present themselves before the Lord of all the land. Lamor Lefanav, and what are they, what's happening? Yisalachnu Ba'aretz, V'nei Yosheves B'shava, O Malaya Cherav Adam. What happens? The angels come down the angels are in earth, and they then come back to God and report to God what's happening. Are the people doing mitzvos? Are they doing averos? Are they being good? Are they being bad? Is there shalva? Is there serenity in Israel, in the earth? On Malaya Cherav Adam, is there fighting? Is there war, bloodshed? They give the report back to God that once God hears what's going on, he then sends them back down to fulfill his bidding. Right? If there's peace in the earth, so God will send down the angels to keep the peace and to bless the people. If the people are doing terrible things, then God will send the angels back down to punish the other people. So that explains the Olam V'Yardim. Again, Rashi was bothered. Everyone's bothered by Olam V'Yardim. Why are you going up and then coming down? So Rashi said the going up was the angels that were leaving Yaakov as he was leaving Israel. The ones coming down, the ones to escort him outside of Israel. Ramban says differently. He says the angels are down here. They're looking around. They're writing reports. Right? They got their binoculars or their iPhones out, and they're taking pictures and the recording devices. They come back up, then they go up to God to give the report. God hears what's going on. God then says, okay, now we need to see the reward or to punish the people. Come back down and then fulfill my bidding. Okay. What's the message to Yaakov, says Ramban? Vero kihu yisparach nitzav al sulam maftichol Yaakov atacha gedola. God is the one standing over the ladder, and he's promising Yaakov the following. What God was telling Yaakov is that Hashem himself will always watch over him. In other words, there won't be an intermediary. There won't be any angels that will be necessary to watch him, but God himself will watch him. I'm going to be with you. Wherever you go, you're not going to have the angels to be your escort, like Rosh says. I'm going to be your escort, Hashem says. For most people, you know who escorts most, whatever exactly this means, who escorts most people in this world? God says angels. We know that from Tehillim, right? From Perek Tzadi Aleph, Yoshe B'Seisr Elyon, which we say every Shabbat this morning. We also say at a funeral, Yoshe B'Seisr Elyon, we say Ki Malachav, that an angel, God commands the angel to guard you in all your ways. So most of us have angels watching over us, God's messengers. But Yaakov was different. Yaakov, God was saying, I'm personally going to watch over you. So that was, again, a little different take on it, but a similar idea that, again, Hashem is saying, I'm going to be watching over you. I'm going to be protecting you. Okay. Then he quotes a medrash, the Perkei de Rabbi Eliezer. Excuse me. And the Perkei de Rabbi Eliezer says the following. He says, Zosamarek inyan bein absarim, that this vision was much larger than just a personal message for Yaakov in that particular moment, but rather was a global message or a historic prophecy, and it was a prophecy that was going to lay out the future for Yaakov and his descendants. Similar to what we saw a few weeks ago in Parshas Lech Lecha, according to the way the Ramban understood it, one of the messages of the Bris Bein Absarim, of the covenant between the parts, where Avram had to shech the animals and walk through the animals. And what was the message there, which is similar to here? Kiro memshelas arba machios malasam iridasam. Totally different approach. What was he showing? God showing Yaakov. He was showing him the future challenges that his descendants would unfortunately have to face, and specifically the four nations that would give trouble to the Jewish people. Post Egypt, after Egypt, right? Even once we were in the land of Israel, we'd be subjugated to four nations throughout history. Four nations, of course, are Babel, Babylonia, Paras/Madai, Persia, Yavan, Greece, and then finally Edom, Rome. Rome, of course, the ones that destroyed the second base of Migdash. The Babylonians destroyed the first base of Migdash. The Persians defeat, when we were in exile in Babylonia, the Persians defeated the Babylonians. We then became under Persian rule. The whole Purim story occurred under the Persians. And then the Greeks is the Hanukkah story, right, during the Second Temple period of the troubles that we faced with the Greeks. And that's the Olim v'Yardim. The Olim v'Yardim is not the angels, but it's these nations that we're going to subjugate and rule over us and persecute us. And he says, Harel lo HaKadosh, he quotes the Medrash. The Medrash of Perkei de Rabbi Eliezer says this. Harel lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Arba Malach, God showed these four kingdoms, Boshlam, their rule, their dominion, but also as a comfort to Yaakov, he showed Yaakov of them, he showed them their demise, their defeat, their destruction. Those, they wouldn't be around forever. And he's very specific. You know, it was a big ladder. So how many rungs up, you know, were these angels going up and down? So when it came to the kingdom of Babel, he showed them Shivim Avakim, 70 rungs. So it was 70 years of the Babylonian exile. So 70 years, but guess what happened after 70 years? The angel then fell off. It collapsed. It dissipated, disappeared. It was no more. Babel was over. And then he showed them Persia. And how long was Persia, according to the rabbinic tradition? 52 years was the subjugation to the Jewish people. But then it also collapsed. And then he showed them Yavan, the Greeks. And how long is that, according again to the rabbinic tradition of them causing trouble for the Jewish people? Me'oshmonim, 180 years, 180 steps, but then it also collapsed. And finally shows him Rome. And Rome, and this is why it goes up to heaven. It kept on going and going and going and going. We know we continue to be in the exile of Rome. Right? The second base of Mikdash was destroyed, and we're still in that exile 2,000 years later. And Yaakov's looking up, and like it's not ending. It's getting higher and higher and higher. And he quotes a pasuk from Yeshayahu, Amr, Yaakov says to God, Ach el shol turad. You know, is there no ending? Are we going to be brought down to the grave? Samuel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God responds in Navi Ovadia, it talks about the ultimate downfall of Rome in Tagbiyah Kinesher, that even if it soars like an eagle, ultimately it's not, one day it's gonna come back down. It won't be there forever. So in other words, according to this, Hashem is telling Yaakov about the future. And not to despair, that just like he himself is going into some unknown situation, an issue of great travail and pain and suffering and fear, but it will come to an end. It won't be forever. Ultimately, he'll be able to return and to rebuild and to reemerge. So too, his descendants in the future, they may face, unfortunately, similar predicaments, but they always will survive. They always will be able to reemerge and to reestablish themselves. And there's a beautiful insight by Chaim Shmulevitz, the famed Amir Mashkiach, in this week's Parsha, where he points out that if you're a Baal Kori, this is one of the hardest Parshios to read. Not just because of the words, but because there's no breaks in the Torah. Usually in most Parshios, there's Psuchos and Stumos. There's breaks, there's like ends of paragraphs. There's sometimes breaks between ideas, like eight letter break, where you see like white in the Sefer Torah break in between between words or new paragraphs. In Parsha Yetze, there's no breaks at all. There are zero breaks. Parsha Smiketz is the only other Parsha that's like that. When you're Baal Kori, it's hard to find the place in between Aliyahs because you got to know exactly where you left off because there's no paragraph break. Why is that? So Chaim Shmulevitz explained. Because the purpose, quoted a Tosos, it says normally the reason why there are those breaks in the Torah, because that symbolizes when God taught the Torah to Moshe, God would pause and allow Moshe to ask questions, review, make sure he understood, and only after he understood, he'd go on to the next topic. But those breaks symbolize that those moments for review that Moshe had. But in Parshas Vayetze, there are no breaks because God did not allow Moshe to ask any questions in Parsha Vayetze. Why not? Because Vayetze doesn't make any sense. Right here you have Yosef. So here you have Yaakov. Yaakov, right, the son of Yitzchak, the grandson of Avram. And his life is so difficult, so full of pain, suffering, running in fear from Esau, having to deal with the trickery of Lavan, all the challenges of raising his children and his wives. It's like one bad thing after the next. And so if Moshe would stop to ask any questions, it wouldn't be an answer, right? It's like the story of Jewish history of suffering and pain that we have established. And God says you can't stop, right? You just keep on moving forward. And eventually at the end, so maybe eventually you'll be able to look back and understand, you know, why this happened, why that happened, why this had to occur. But in the moment, you're not going to understand, right? It's the angel, it's those nations rising and getting stronger and stronger, and you're in that terrible predicament, and like it doesn't make any sense, and the pain, the suffering is so great. But eventually there will be a conclusion. Eventually there will be a reason for everything. So Yaakov's exile is the beginning, really, of the exile of the Jewish people as a whole, and that is therefore the symbolism, according to the Pirkei Elazar, of the latter. I want to share just one or two other insights. One is the Radak. The Radak says something very interesting, totally different. He says, on a much brighter and happier note, that the latter symbolizes Har Sinai. And fasting, he points out that the gematria of Sulam is the same exact gematria, numerical value, as Sinai. right? Samach is 60, and Sulam is 60 plus 30 plus 40, 130. So what's Sinai? Sinai is 60 plus 50, that's 110, plus Yud and Yud, 130, same exact thing. But the ladder was he was being shown Har Sinai. And who is old in the Yardim? That's Moshe and Aaron. Moshe is going up the mountain. Yardim is then, you know, him coming down with the Luchos. Hashem Yitzav Olav is God was hovering over the mountain, Har Sinai, giving the Torah. And therefore, what is Yaakov being shown here? He's being shown the secret to Jewish survival. What's going to allow us to survive throughout the centuries? Our connection to God, to His Torah. That if we cling to His Torah and we remain proud of Jews, as we saw when we did Parshas Chayisara with Honor Eshkol Mamre, that we remain a committed Jews, so that's going to guarantee our survival, right? Our embracing the Torah that God has given us. And I'll never forget about 22, 23 years ago when I was living in Boca Raton, Florida, Rav Yerucham Olshan is one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood Yeshiva. He came to Boca, he gave a fundraise. Rosh Yeshivas have to fundraise for the yeshivas. I remember he spoke in the shul at one night, Kim Mincha Marv. I wrote that afterward what he said. I looked it over before. He pointed out that that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, each one is known for something else. And he said that Avram, right, Avram, he's associated with the Har, with the mountain. He davens right in Har Moriah. And Yitzchak davens basadel, so he davens in the field. Yaakov, he has his dream and he connects to God in the base of Elohim, the house of God. So the mountain, the field, and the house. And Revulsion, I forget, reported another sefer suggested that the mountain represents the Temple Mount, the Har HaMoriah. That's the Temple Mount. The field represents the base of Mikdash, the Azara, and the bias is the Kodesh HaKadosh and the Holy of Holies, right, where the Ark was kept. So different parts of the base of Mikdash. And he said further that the symbolism of each one is slightly different in that what the mountain represents, if I remember this all correctly, the mountain represents the notion of tefillah, that Avram was praying, and then Yitzchak represents the field is the korbanos, the sacrifices, but Yaakov is the bias, that's the base medrash, that's the Torah learning, and all three are necessary, right? It's the temple, it's the davening, it's the sacrifices, and it's the Torah. And Yaakov is like the bias that brings it all together. The base of Mikdash had all three aspects: the aspects of the tefillah, of the sacrifice, also the Torah, the Sanhedrin said in the base of Mikdash. And therefore, that's the secret to our survival. It's us clinging to Hashem through tefillah, through the avoda, the service, the temple, and then through the Torah learning that we do. We do as well. So that's another beautiful insight into the imagery of the ladder. Now, coming back, and I'll end off with this, Ray Rashi's interpretation that the ladder up, that the angels, that there's different angels with Yaakov at different moments, right? That there's certain angels with him in the land of Israel, there's certain angels with him in Chutz La'aretz. But no matter where he is, God is with him, right? God is with him in each. So the famous question is, so why do I need different angels? Why can't the same angels do escort him everywhere? Why do I need separate angels? So Yaakov Kamenetsky in his beautiful sefer of his insights, Parsha, Emes Yaakov has a very fascinating idea. There's a very famous medrash, the kids are all taught this in school, that when Yaakov leaves his father's household to go to Haran, to Laban's house, he took a little bit of a detour. So sometimes a detour takes you 20 minutes out of the way, an hour out of the way. You know how long Yaakov's detour was before he got to Laban's house? According to the Medrash, Rashi quotes us, 14 years. 14-year detour. Right, because the Medrash tries to figure out, you know, the years of Yaakov's life, and not everything adds up, and there seems to be 14 years missing. But the Medrash says, well, he took a 14-year detour. Where did he go for 14 years? So where do people go? So I quote a revulsion from Lakewood. You go to learn a Lakewood for 14 years. You sit and learn Torah. So where did Yaakov go to sit and learn Torah? According to the Medrash, he went to the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Eber. Right, Yaakov, Noach's son Shem, and the great-grandson Eber, he went to their yeshiva. What exactly that means? Rav Yaakov Nesek asks the following question. Why does he have to go to a yeshiva? You know, it sounds like he has to go to yeshiva because he never learned Torah in his life. So he's got to go to yeshiva to learn Torah. But 1 second. You're telling me Yaakov never learned Torah in his life? Why do you have to go to Shem Ve'Eber? He had the best Rosh Yeshiva of anyone. You know who his Rosh Yeshiva were? His Rebbeim were, Yaakov? Yitzchak. Yitzchak Avinu. And he also was alive for a while for the Zaydi Avram Avinu. What yeshiva would you rather be in? The yeshiva Avram? It's like the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Eber. With all due respect to Shem Ve'Eber, you'd probably rather be in the yeshiva of Avram and Yitzchak. So why has he got to go another 14 years to Shem Ve'Eber? So Kamenetsky says something beautiful. He says, you're right, the best Rosh Yeshiva, the best Rebbeim are Avram and Yitzchak. But guess what? They couldn't teach him everything that he needed to know. They could teach him how to live in Israel. They could teach him how to live in a sort of utopian existence of living in a place of, you know, kulo kedusha, of all holiness and sanctity. That's what they were able to teach him, right? The people came to Avraham and Yitzchak, right? The people came to visit them, and then they would teach them, guide them, inspire them. But Yaakov now is going to be in a new situation. Avraham and Yitzchak themselves were never in. Certainly not his father Yitzchak. And now is what was Yaakov now going to find himself in? He's going to be living in a foreign land. He's going to be living amongst people that are going to do everything to try to harm him and compromise his values. Right? Lavan was terrible. We've talked about in the past. What Lavan tried to do to Yaakov, and so Yaakov needed a Rebbeim who could teach him how to live in that harsh environment. And who was better, who was the best to teach him that? Not Avraham and Yitzchak, but Shem. Because Shem was Noah's son. And guess what? Guess where Noah Shem lived his life? He lived his life with the Dor HaMabul, right? He grew up, you know, with the people, the most corrupt people in the world, the worst in the world, that the whole world was destroyed because they were so corrupt. Right, and Shem Ve'Eber lived the time also of the Dor HaFlaga, the generation of the Tower of Babel. Right, they lived in a horrible world, and yet the amazing thing about Shem Ve'Eber, according to our traditions, is that they remained strong, they remained committed, and so Yaakov had to now go to them to figure out how am I going to make it through living with Lavan, and that in such a harsh and terrible environment, right, such a difficult environment where they're actually trying to be antithetical. The values of my father and grandfather. How am I able to stay strong? And he uses a very interesting parable. He asks the question, Yaakov Nesky. So at the end of the day, didn't Yaakov violate his father's instructions? What did Yitzchak tell Yaakov to do? Then in the last week, Parsha, he didn't tell him to go to yeshiva for 14 years. What did he tell him to do? He told him to go to Lavan's house. How could he delay for 14 years? So he says, he gives a following parable. He says, let's say a father, 2 days before Sukkot, the father tells his son, go buy me a lulav and esrog. So what should the son do? Go buy the lulav and esrog. But what happens if the son doesn't know the halachas of lulav and esrog? How is he supposed to know what to buy? So what should he do? It's understood that the father wants him to buy a kosher lulav and esrog, but if he doesn't know the halachas, what should he do? He should go down the block to the base medrash and go sit and learn for a couple hours with the halachas. And only after he knows the halachas of what to look for, can he then go to the store and actually buy the lulav and esrog. So you wouldn't say that the son is violating the father's commandments by spending 2 hours first in the base medrash. He's fulfilling what the father told him to do, right? He's got to be educated though first, and then the laws. Only then he can buy. So Yaakov here as well is being educated first in how to live in a place like in a house of Lavan. Only once he felt ready and he went to the proper teachers, could he then go to Lavan and be able to survive a very difficult predicament. What's the takeaway of all this? right? What's the message? So I believe the message is that we all have to prepare ourselves for different stages in life. We have to know ourselves, right? Every situation is different. And again, that's the symbolism of the angels, that there's some angels that escort you in Israel, but there are other angels that escort you outside of Israel. And what works in one place isn't necessarily going to work in another place. And therefore, you know, throughout our lives, we're always facing new situations, new realities. It doesn't matter our age, you know, and our predicament. Things are constantly evolving and changing. And just because one thing worked, you know, for the last 50 years, doesn't mean it's going to work tomorrow as well. Right? We constantly have to be aware and to assess what is happening. So Hashem needs some love. Hashem is with us. Right, Hashem is rooting for us. Hashem is watching over us. And as the Ramban said, there's enemies, right, that are out to that are the Pirkei Avot. There's enemies that are out to get us. And Hashem is ultimately over us, but we have to do our part as well, right? We also have the onus of responsibility placed upon us to do our part, and our part of our part is constantly reevaluating, reassessing, you know, where we find ourselves and what the current, you know, issues of the day are, the current realities that we face, and to understand and have the wisdom to recognize not necessarily what we face today is what we faced yesterday, and to constantly prepare and to respond accordingly based upon, you know, the predicaments that we find ourselves. And that's the vision of the ladder. It's rooted in this earth, and it's reaching towards the heavens. Our job is always to reach towards the heavens. Right? As the Radak said, it's the Torah that guides us, and the Torah that sends us messages, but it's our responsibility to understand how to then interpret that Torah, and how to use the Torah to guide us in the situations in which we find ourselves. Because what Yaakov was going to encounter was vastly different what he had experienced the previous years of his life. And Baruch Hashem, you know, ultimately, you know, he was able to be successful. But Yaakov Kasky points out one thing. That's what Yaakov, he says, the symbol of Yaakov being with Yosef, is that Yaakov had this vision, knew that Yosef would also be in Egypt and be in this difficult predicament. And it was a special Torah that he learned with Shem Aver, he shared with Yosef, or to allow Yosef to survive, you know, being in Egypt, being in the house of Potiphar, working for Pharaoh. So the brothers didn't get this, why he was treating Yosef differently. They didn't understand that Yosef was different than they were. And that's like a whole other story. And the bottom line takeaway is that, you know, what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another, and even the same person, different times in life, call for a different response and a different reaction. And it's that Torah that constantly has the ability to guide us, but we need to recognize and constantly be aware of what's going to work now, what's going to assist us, and it's Hashem that's hovering over us, that's watching over us, but it's also we doing our part to be able to get through the challenges that come before us, and to navigate those challenges, but ultimately to be able to be successful through them, and hopefully to come out better and stronger, and to be able to continue to march forward. Okay, hope everyone has a wonderful Shabbos.